of America.
Good morning. Mark Davidson from Williams Kastner on behalf of the appellant Frederick Graham. This issue goes...
Did you wish to reserve...
I'm sorry. 3 minutes, please, for rebuttal.
All right. 3 minutes. You may proceed.
This case raises the issue of the ownership of beneficial interests in a trust. Clearly...
How does that relate to relief that we could afford you in this case?
This court could reverse the trial court's order finding a separate and potentially adverse interest held by someone other than Mr. Graham.
Okay, that's not necessary to the relief granted that you've appealed from, is it?
Well, yes, Your Honor, it is, because there are potentially multiple issues in the case, all dealing with the issue of whether there is only one person who owns both trust interests, the remainder interest held by his estate and his lifetime interest.
Well, there are going forward potential interests, but in terms of what the trial court did in this case, how do those issues need to be resolved in order to affirm or reverse the trial court in terms of the relief it actually granted?
Having determined that there are two separate and potentially adverse interests, that is the court's ruling, and that will apply whenever other issues are raised. It was identified by the trust officer in this case at CP 53 that there are other related issues, including whether a GAL is required to be appointed for purposes of negotiating a non-judicial agreement.
Okay, well, the trial court found there was no GAL required here and dismissed it after there had been one appointed ex parte. Is that right?
That is correct.
Okay, so the trial court's determination so far, at least, is no GAL is required.
And that was only because of the argument that was made by the bank in the alternative that because of the stochastic method that was adopted, if you analyze whether or not the distribution amounts were appropriate, then they were.
So how would the bank, in good faith going forward, argue that a guardian ad litem is needed?
Because the bank would say, just as it said in this instance, in the first initial summary judgment motion, that there are two independent...
But we have a trial court ruling on that.
We do have a trial court ruling on
that. And it supports your position. No guardian ad litem is required.
No. I disagree, Your Honor. I believe that what the court held is that in this instance, the separate interest is not potentially adverse. And because it's not potentially adverse as to this narrow issue, then we don't need the GAL. But it also specifically said, as to other issues, those can be brought to the court at a later time.
And you want us to give you an advisory ruling on what the right answer is for those future issues?
No. What we're asking this court for is a ruling that there is only one person who owns both interests. And therefore, for purposes of negotiating a non-judicial agreement, and for all purposes, there need not be an examination of whether a GAL is necessary to be appointed. And most specifically, Your Honors, what this case raises is whether or not in the state of Baird and the state of Wiltermud is still the law in this state. Because those cases hold unequivocally that heirs and devisees have no present interest.
Did the trial court decide the issue, though, that you've just framed for us to decide? My impression is it did not.
I believe it did, Your Honor, because that is the argument that was asserted in the petition by the trustee. It said there are two independent interests, and the petition posited as fact that there are two independent and positive...
The trial court said for the purposes of the issue before us, there are not, we're going to dismiss the guardian ad litem. You're saying there might be other instances where they're going to say again one's needed, and we don't want to have to go back and ask the court what the right answer is.
I believe, Your Honor, that this question goes to really the broader issue of whether or not, and it also relates to the second order, which is the breach of fiduciary duty claim, which was dismissed by the court. And it was dismissed by the court because it took the position that the petition was not advocating against Mr. Graham's interest. But that's exactly what the petition does. If you review the petition, it asserts as fact that there are two interests and that they are potentially adverse. And then based on that, the petition asks the court for instruction as to whether a GAL is required. But the fundamental posit that is made in, and again, I refer to CP 53 at paragraph 7 of the trust officer's declaration, he says that the heirs and devisees, the what they call the unascertained vested remainderment, have an interest. But they don't. They're not vested because of the existing law that says...
Can I interrupt you for a second? Do you think it's well settled that there's only one interest?
I think in this case, that's what the court held, yes.
That's not my question. The question is whether it's well settled as a matter of law when you have something of this nature that there's only one interest. The reason I ask that is because if I'm in the bank's position and it's not well settled, I might reasonably think, I better not think I know the answer. Let me go ask the court to tell me what the answer is so I don't get one side or the other of this answer coming after me as the fiduciary.
Two comments in response. First of all, I guess I would say potentially there are two interests but owned by the same person because Mr. Graham owns the lifetime interest and he owns his estate, which holds the remainder interest. But as so far as what the bank did, could it ask the court for advice? Yes, it could have. Give us instructions. But that's not what it did. The only instruction it asked for is whether or not a GAL needs to be appointed to represent the adverse interest held by the heirs and devisees. But under existing law, they have no interest. They are not vested. Because of the Wiltermuth and Baird cases cited in our reply brief, which hold unequivocally that all they have is a mere expectancy. They have no legally protectable interest. And if they have no such interest, then the bank is wrong in the underlying assumptions in its petition, and the court was wrong to say, yes, I agree with the bank, which is what the court said in the summary judgment order, that there is a separate interest and potentially adverse. I don't find it adverse as to the distribution issue, but that's the law of this case, and that's wrong. It's fundamentally in error and could lead to the appointment of a GAL to represent that interest in the NJA negotiations.
And if that happened, you're taking the position that you'd be out of luck coming back to this court to say, wait a minute, there's no separate interest here. We don't even have to talk about a GAL.
I don't think we should have to come back to the court again. When we have an order from the Superior Court saying, I agree with the bank, there is a separate interest, that is the holding in this case, and that's what we're asking this court to reverse.
Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors. I'm Matthew Harrington on behalf of the respondent, Trustee Bank of America. This trust provides payments of income only to Mr. Graham. Principal, on the other hand, may be distributed if, in the judgment of the trustee, interest together with other sources of income would be insufficient to provide for the proper support of Mr. Graham's accustomed manner of living. Now, Mr. Graham wanted $760,000 a year, but the trustee determined that that was more than the trust document allowed. We were willing to distribute $661,000 a year, which
that's really not what's an issue here, though, is it? The only thing that really Mr. Graham's concerned about is whether there are two interests or one interest,
as well as
to negotiate with or deal with for purposes of this trust.
And I think you're absolutely right.
The
finding regarding the either the amount or the method of distribution in future years.
So I asked Mr. Graham's counsel whether it was well settled in Washington that there was one interest or two interests at the time the bank filed his petition. I think his answer is as well settled that there's one interest because the rest of it's an expectancy.
Right.
He didn't say it quite that succinctly, but I think that's his answer.
And
what's your response?
Our response is that we firmly believe that there are two interests. I think it's important to note that Mr. Graham wants to focus on a particular two interests, his and his estate's. And he's citing cases about heirs and devisees, but he's quoting principles of estate law that have no bearing here. We're here to interpret a trust. Give and under trust law, there's,
question.
Yeah, there's a lifetime and a remainder.
Why do we need to reach the issue of whether or not there are two interests to resolve this case?
Because the trustee brought a petition for instruction seeking guidance from the trial court. It had been negotiating at length with Mr. Graham over 12 months.
Okay, the trial court appointed a guardian ad litem for purposes of representing remainderman with respect to the particular issue that was before it under this petition.
Right.
It then found that there weren't two separate interests as so far as this particular issue was concerned, but that there, according to counsel, there may be situations where there are two interests and you can come back to the court and resolve that some other day and then dismiss the guardian ad litem and then granted the rest of the relief it granted.
Right. And we're certainly, we agree with the holding that there are separate interests. We disagreed with the court's holding regarding whether there's a conflict. But I think that this issue is still an issue that's properly before the court because of the nature of a petition for instructions as being analogous to a declaratory judgment action. We're seeking a declaration of the rights of the parties here, and the trustee needs that information in order to proceed and administer the trust. I'd also note, though, that the court below based its finding that there was no conflict of interest upon a misapprehension that I believe it was the court's impression that there would be nothing left over for the remainderman under our plan of distribution.
There's no cross appeal from the bank, correct?
That's correct, Your Honor.
So the dismissal of the guardian ad litem in this case is not before us.
The dismissal of the guardian ad litem, it is not, although the orders are before you and the court.
I understand the orders are, but you didn't appeal the trial court's decision that there weren't two separate interests for purposes of the particular issue being resolved by the trial court.
For that narrow issue, correct. Because, as you have pointed out, Your Honor, in the future, we remain able to determine that there is a conflict under which Mr. Graham may not represent.
And why shouldn't we leave resolution of this separate interest to a future day when we have the parameters of a specific issue in front of us instead of speaking hypothetically?
Well, again, the issue, I believe, is properly before you because it was a petition for instructions, not merely it was not merely the specific plan of distribution that was before the court. It was a declaration of rights.
Any instruction the court provided you that you take exception to?
I'm sorry? Is there
any instruction that the court provided you that you take exception to?
We disagree, I guess, as a matter of argument, we disagree with the holding or the determination that there was no conflict of interest on that specific issue.
Any other instruction that you disagree with since we've decided that one's not before us?
There's no other issue that we don't agree with. But I think
I have another question.
Yes.
Are there other instructions that you ask the court to give you in your petition that the court failed to provide?
No, Your Honor. I think the court also, it's instructive to look at the nature of TEDRA, which allows for an action to decide any matter of trust administration. And so that should be construed.
I have a question about, in terms of the conflict,
I'll
answer that for a second. What is the degree of showing that must be made that there is a conflict? Is it just that there's potential remainderman out there? As I read the record, and I may have missed something,
right.
There's no fact established as to who any or anybody.
But there will be an interest. There is a provision
so
in the trust.
It's just the general interest itself. Is
that's
that
right.
The bundle of rights concept that you're talking about?
It will
there's
go
a
to
potential
someone.
Potential interest somewhere.
Well, it could go. Mr. Graham could leave his estate to the U.S. government.
And that is who it will go to. In that event.
So would you say the trial court then needs to appoint a guardian ad litem to represent the interests of the United States government while Mr. Graham's litigating
with... Well, we don't know.
Well, let me finish my question.
Certainly.
While Mr. Graham's litigating with the bank, when and how much of the trust he receives?
You mean at some point in the future?
Yes.
We cannot... It would be improper for the court or for the trustee to make any decisions or attempt to represent or appoint a GAL for a specific beneficiary, a specific remainder beneficiary, because the will is an ambulatory document, and Mr. Graham can, at any time up until his death, change the identity of the remainder interest. So we are forced to treat the remainder interest as the vested but unascertainable interest that it is. And so, no, we could not, it wouldn't be proper to appoint a GAL to represent the U.S. government, because even if we knew what his will said, that could change at any time. I think that...
So we're being asked to rule that the bank is required to get a guardian ad litem appointed to represent the interests of persons unknown, with the value of the interest also unknown.
That's correct. But we do know that there will be a value, or there almost certainly will be a value, and there will be an interest. There is someone who will take, other than Mr. Graham.
So the bank doesn't know the will. Could, as under the broad equitable powers of TEDRA, could the court order him to produce the will?
It could, but that would not solve our problem here, because he could change it in
any time. What
about
saying you can't change the will?
I don't.
If you want to live in this trust, you can't change the will.
No, it's not in the trust document, and also under Washington law, a person has an absolute right to write a will and, you know, devise their property how they want.
Does your answer change if a trust has an unfettered right to invade the corpus?
I'm sorry, I missed the first part of the question.
Does your answer change as to the separate interest being ripe if the trust provides for the life tenant to have an unfettered right to invade the corpus?
I think it might. It would be a different trust document. I also think that we'd be thinking about this differently if this trust identified a specific person, like Mr. Graham's nephew or a charity. If that were the case, no one would disagree. We all would be that we would know that person absolutely would have to be represented for purposes of any court action or a non-judicial binding agreement. The fact
you'd still
that
have a life tenant, you'd still have a remainderman in
exactly.
The sense of an estate, in my example. So why would the answer be any different? If there's a potential interest that has to be potentially raises a conflict because there's an estate out there, it wouldn't make any difference if you could invade on an unfettered basis.
If I understand the court's question correctly, I guess I haven't thought through that hypothetical entirely, but I think that would change things, because in that case, Mr. Graham would have an absolute right to the full amount of the trust. But
and
that's
he
not
could terminate the trust at his own
He
will.
Could. I would say that the implication of Mr. Graham's argument here is that he owns both interests. If that were the case, the trust would merge, it would disappear, and he certainly doesn't want that to happen. The final point I would make, Your Honors, is that if the court is to read the sections we've cited to, the virtual representation statute, the special representation section, section 250, as well as the non-judicial binding agreement section 220, it's absolutely clear that all of these sections contemplate representation of unascertained interests. Some of them talk specifically about that. The Washington legislature has been very focused on representing interests even when they are unascertainable, even when they're not present. And so therefore, I think that Mr. Graham's authorities about general principles of estate law are of no moment here.
Thank you, counsel. You have 3 minutes.
Thank you, Your Honor. Let me first clarify that what the trial court said is not that there were two interests. Let me back up a second. What the trial court said here is that there are two interests and that they are potentially adverse, but that no GAL is required because in this instance, on this issue, there's no adversity. It didn't say there was one interest, and that's why a no GAL was required.
What about counsel's final point toward the end of his argument, that if Mr. Graham is both the beneficiary of the trust and owns whatever remains, the trust is at an end?
I disagree with that, because we're not talking about the legal interest. Essentially, in theory, you had fee simple at the top. You had the trustor. And then the interests were split. There was a beneficial interest to the lifetime beneficiary, Mr. Graham, and then you have the legal interest in the trustee. They don't merge until Mr. Graham dies, and at that point you'll have fee simple again in the estate. And that's why when counsel made the comment that, well, estate law doesn't apply here and that's irrelevant, it does apply, because the remainder beneficiary, the vested remainder beneficiary, is his estate. And when they talk about general powers or somebody, excuse me?
What if he were to disclaim? His will disclaims a power of appointment.
I don't think that would change anything, because then the assets...
Well, it doesn't vest in his estate any longer.
Well, I guess I would have to say, Your Honor, normally you have a situation where you can't disclaim.
He can't. Is there anything in the trust that requires him to designate a successor? As I thought, there was a default in the trust if he fails to.
I think that is correct. It goes to the estate if he doesn't exercise a power of appointment. That is
so
correct.
Then his estate could disclaim. He could, in his will, disclaim. I don't.
But if in his will, he could make an appointment.
He doesn't have to. That's my point.
That is correct. And then the assets of the trust would go to his estate, and then the heirs and devisees would have their interest. Only then would they have any sort of legally cognizable interest. They don't right now. The only entities that do are...
Could he disclaim so that it never got to his estate? Does he have that capacity while he's alive?
I don't believe he does, because I think that the estate, again... The state doesn't presently exist. It doesn't. The state. It's not clear then, under that circumstance, what the trustee would do. But again, that's a hypothetical that I don't think goes to the heart of the issue. I agree that a TEDRA action like this is one for a declaration of rights. The court declared the rights. That's why this case is ripe and mature for this court's decision as to whether there are two separate interests, or whether that are potentially adverse, or whether both interests, because they're controlled by Mr. Graham, belong to him and there's no adversity.
Thank you, counsel. That concludes our arguments this morning.
All rise.
The court will be in recess.